Well, good evening. It's Robert A. Wilson on Cowboy Wisdom NLI
Radio.
Well, good evening. It's Robert A. Wilson with Cowboy Wisdom NLI Coaching. And I'm waiting for the guests to call in, so I'm just going to improvise until they show up. Anyway, and this is life. Life has a way of getting in the way of life. And there's nothing can happen, but we have to go forward in life, and that's the thing you have to really become open to, is to be open to whatever happens and however it happens. And it's just something that happens during the day. Nobody can plan life or how it goes. And sometimes Blog Talk Radio, we have a few challenges with it. It's a great system, and it just does what it does. But anyway, we're going to talk about expanding through life until Christine Gargoni shows up. And she's also the author of, there she is, she's waiting for me. Well, good evening, everybody. I want to welcome Christine Gargoni to the show. She's the author of Financial Fables, and I've been reading the book. And it's really kind of gets into you in a different way. It makes you actually have to go to websites, and you can really research and do it. And I met Christine in the airport in Atlanta on my way to Florida, and it was one of the greatest honors of the trip. And now, without any further ado, I want to bring Christine Gargoni onto the show. Welcome, Christine. She's very smart, bright, and beautiful.
Good evening, Robert. How are you this evening?
I am very excellent. I've been reading your book. I made a round trip to Reno, Nevada this Sunday, and I was reading it on the road and stuff like that. Not on the road, but when I stopped and stuff. That's a very interesting book, but it also allows you to take a trip with the fantasy and the fables. And really, isn't life a fantasy? We just try to make it an absolute?
Absolutely, Robert. We start with our fables when we're very young, and it's really the essence of how we learn. It's a wonderful, storytelling is a wonderful way of making a point and making it your own. You know, it's basically when you're a small child, your parents tell you stories, and they used to tell them because it taught a moral and of how you should act and how you should be. And as we get older, we lose track of that storytelling, and we watch a lot of television. The television is also storytelling. I mean, everybody has their favorite television show, and there's a great story behind each one of the shows that they watch.
But, you know, here's the thing. When I read your book, it wasn't about the challenges of life. It was about moving your life forward. Isn't that where we get caught up in life? We start telling stories about everything that happened rather than telling the fables about where we want to go. And actually, I call it fantasize the wise to walk in spiritual essence, to walk to walls in success every day.
You know, and you are so right. And, you know, I love the way that you expand vocabulary and make rhymes, because that's another thing that we learn as children and we lose sight of. But it's really in our core. You know, between the storytelling and getting roots into our past so that we can expand into our future, we also have that wonderful rhyming that we had as children. And we also, you know, expand our minds in the possibilities of things that we have to come. But the main way that I use my storytelling, you have a great book yourself, Fear is My Friend. And I just really got enveloped in that, because one of my favorite quotes was one from Richard Nixon. You know, Richard Nixon was a great president. You can either love him or hate him. But he opened so much trade, so much economic trade between globally, you know, with Russia and China, and really made us a global economy. And one of the things that he used to say is, people are motivated by fear, not love. They don't teach you that in Sunday school. And the faster you make fear your friend, the more you will acknowledge a major source of your motivation. And that's exactly what you do in your book. You just basically get people to expand their minds. Now, after you get people to expand their minds and they get their cash flow coming in, what my book does is help them manage that cash flow. Because you can't imagine how many people in life get windfalls of cash that come into their lives and they can't manage it. You know, just one of the, I have an article that I send out that says how to go broke like a rock star. And there's a lot of people who've made a lot of money, like Nicolas Cage. He had to go into foreclosure on one of his homes. You know, that's a name that most people know. I don't know if you remember the Johnny Carson show. Edmund Mann, he went broke. And he had a job for years with Johnny Carson. Now, not everything you do, you it's just on the cash flow that comes in. That's your first step. You're going to take them on the first step. But the second step is you really need to know how to respect and have debt in your life and manage it and go forward with that. And that's what Fables does for you. It reaches down into your core. It gives you a little bit of a story. And then it helps you and directs you to the place you want to go.
But when I was looking at it, here's the thing that opened my mind, is at the end of every chapter, you have an action plan. Decide what you want to accomplish, explore your resources, create a plan, take action, reevaluate, find a trusted advisor, share. You know, it isn't only just reading the book. Most books out there, I have to be honest, and something I've really expanded into myself is a lot of books want to spin you and keep you in the same spin so you keep buying their books and you stay in the feel good in the same place you always been is what I'm really trying to say. But when you read Financial Fables, which is available on Amazon.com, you actually have to sit down and unspin the spin and unpreach the teach and unteach the preach to open yourself up. And how did you come up with that?
Well, you know, I wanted to do seven tales. It's Financial Fables, seven tales to transform your financial life and more. I want to, you know, we really wanted people to transform themselves. Don't stay in the same place. Go and step outside that box and be more than you can possibly imagine. And the way that we came up with that was, you know, I teach a lot of groups. And I would say to them, there was a lot of financial instruments that I would be very acquainted with. For example, bonds, mutual funds, exchange-traded funds. And a lot of people would just look at me and say, oh, well, we don't know about those things. We keep our money in the bank because we want it to be safe. And I said, well, you know, there's a risk in every investment. And even there's a risk in having your money in the bank. And I'll tell you what that risk is. It's purchasing power risk. You keep your money in the bank, and you're going to get, maybe 0.5% right now. And if you don't do something with that money and make it work for you, then maybe inflation is at 2%. You're only getting 0.5% back. In 10 years, you've lost 10% of your purchasing power. So you need to acknowledge that there's risk in every type of investment. And that's really one of the – once you step outside that box and say, wow, you know, I'm at risk of whatever I do. I need to learn about this. I need to know how to manage this. I need to get in control of it and do something about this so I can provide for myself and for my family, and I can have the good things in life too.
And, you know, that's the thing. Wealth and success – people understanding their talents and wealth and success are the two biggest fears people have that they never want to address, I feel.
Well, yeah, it is. You know, I have worked with many people. I'm going to tell you one story that was really can encompass that whole idea of what you're just saying. is because sometimes wealth and success will isolate you from your social circle. I used to have a client years, about 20 years ago, that made $1 million in a particular industry. And every year he would treat his friends, and they would go down to Daytona because they like to go to the car races. And they would stay at a little trailer park. Now, you have a millionaire, and he's in a trailer park. Well, one year he decides, I'm going to go ahead, and I'm going to take, and I'm going to treat all my friends to this beautiful hotel on the beach. And so he says to them one year, you know what, I'm going to just splurge. I'm going to take, he told them he's going to take a loan out. I'm going to take a loan out, and I'm going to splurge, and I want to treat you to this hotel on the beach, and we're going to have a good time. Well, you know what? Robert, they stayed there two nights, and they were miserable. They missed their friends. They missed their community. And so they all went back. To the day that he died, people didn't know how much money he had. People are so afraid of getting outside their social circles, being ostracized because they have money. Now, the thing is, you don't need to change your life. This man found out, just because I have money, I don't need to change my life. I can go out, I can be successful, I can have comfort, I can let people contribute to my life, and then I can contribute back to them in small ways. He found out that, no, don't change everything, but I can contribute back to them in small ways. He found small ways to give back to his friends. And that made them happy and all together and their family. One thing you don't ever want to do is ostracize your family by saying, you know, by pretending you... They say you're putting on airs. You know, a lot of times they say, "Well, we don't want to be successful. We don't want to have all this money because we don't want people thinking we're putting on airs." Well, you don't need to change your life like that. You need to change your life to make sure you have security for yourself, security for your family, and security for your next generation. And that's really what life is all about, right, Robert? You want to be able to be free to do what you want to do when you want to do it. That's what wealth is. True wealth is being able to be free and to know that if I want to take a vacation with my family, I can. If I want to go off by myself for a little bit, I can. You know, I'm not chained to a 9-to-5 job. I work because I want to, not because I have to. And by following these financial tips and getting yourself financially sound, you can do that.
That isn't really what you want to be, as financially sound, but you also want to be financially sound, wouldn't you say, in the way you approach money?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, when you approach money, I have a really good, one thing that I'd like for people to do is acknowledge from the very beginning that not all debt is bad debt. You know, everybody's always preaching to you, get out of debt, get out of debt, get out of debt. Well, that's true, but, you know, bad debt is debt that you're paying 12%, 15%, and, oh, my God, usurious fees. I've seen people pay 29% to credit cards. They can never get out of that debt, and you need to approach it wisely. Now, I've got a good site that I do recommend in the book, and it's called powerpay.org. It's an organization site. It's powerpay, P-O-W-E-R. PAY.org, and you can put in your credit card amount and the interest, and it will calculate exactly how to get out of the bad debt. Now, there's also good debt in life, like your mortgage. Right now, mortgage rates are down at 3.75%. When you get into a real estate loan, you're going into a home, mortgage can be considered a good debt because hopefully over the next years, if you get a good price on a new purchase, you're going to be getting more out of that. You have a home, you have a family, you have a place to stay, and a comfort level there. That could be considered good debt. Good debt is also any debt that you can make more money than what you're charging to buy. Like, for example, I have all the time people sending me offers in the mail, 0%, use our money for a year for 0%. Well, geez, I would be dumb if I didn't take up that offer, Robert. I use their money for free for a year, and then I pay them back at the end of the year. However I get, whatever return on investment I get for that year is free money for me.
And see, a lot of people don't understand that. I just learned something there, and even though I knew it, I didn't really understand it. Now I do. But when people get all obsessed about money, what does money do to them?
Well, you know, it can really cause a tremendous amount of strain. You know, one of the ideas, stories in the book is called Lisa and Her Beast, and it's all about financial personality. You know, you need to know what your financial, because everybody has a financial personality. Now, you ultimately have, and especially when coupling, sometimes you have a spender and you have a saver. And generally, those two people end up being with each other because almost opposites attract. And then some, you end up with tremendous amount of conflict. In this particular story, it's about Lisa always coupon saving. She's a coupon saver. And her husband is, you know, wants to go out and spend money, you know. And so there's a conflict between the two of them. But once you understand somebody else's financial personality, you can actually get along really well and you can expand and grow. They can, there's some of their personality can rub off on you and some of your personality can rub off on them. And the couples that are successful, you know, money matters is one of the top-rated reasons for divorce in this country and breakups. You know, because people can't get along with their money. So you basically need to be able to reconcile that, too, in order to get happy. You know, you can't let money stress you out. It's only, and it's hard to say this, but it's only money. You know?
And it's only energy.
Yeah, it is, but, you know, one of the things they used to say, well, money can't buy happiness, but I'd rather be rich than poor. But, you know, it's easier to be rich unhappy than poor unhappy. Well, of course, you know, you establish a lifestyle. Once you establish your lifestyle, you know, it goes back to Maslow hierarchy of needs. If you've ever seen that model, the hierarchy of needs, at the very bottom of the pyramid is your comfort levels. And the very, very foundation of existence is your physiological needs. It's basically your breathing, your eating, you know. And then right above that is your comfort needs on the pyramid. And those are your financial, that's where your financial security. So before you can really get into some type of happiness, you don't have to be rich, but you have to have an idea of where your financial security lies. And make sure that you have control over it. And, you know, and that doesn't mean that you have to stop spending. You know, you can have a spending plan. People used to call that a budget. Budget's such a harsh word because people think, oh, I don't want to be on a budget. Budgets tell me I can't spend money. No, it's not that way at all. You know, by going through this book and reading some of these and going through some of these websites, you can acknowledge, especially PowerPay, it actually tells you how to develop a spending plan for yourself. So, for example, if you decide you have, oh, maybe you like to smoke cigarettes. Well, I'm not advocating that you should, but maybe some people do. Or you like to smoke cigars, and you like to smoke expensive cigars. You know, you budget yourself, or you say, I'm going to put in my spending plan, I'm going to spend $50 a month on cigars or cigarettes or something that I really like. Or maybe you really love going out to the movies on Friday nights or Saturday nights. And you say, I'm going to put $50 a month in my spending plan for going to the movies one time a month. Or maybe I'll put $100 or $200 because I can't live without doing that. As long as you put it in the spending plan and you plan to spend it, then you know maybe something else that's not quite as important to you, like going out and getting new shoes, new purse, new this, new that, maybe you cut down on this plan to spend on your clothes, and you plan to spend more on what you want to spend your money on. And, you know, and in that spending plan, too, you also put aside money for a rainy day. You need to have money to build that's going to be working for you so you don't always have to work for your money. You know, make your money work for you.
Yes. And, you know, I've heard that, and sometimes I don't do as good as I should have it, Christine, but I always choose to move forward on it. But when somebody chose to read your book, Financial Fables, Seven Tales to Transform Your Financial Life and More, what do you feel they will get out of it more than anything?
Well, I think it's exactly in the title, transforming their lives. Because you can take the fable and you can start very small and simple. And from there, you can choose how you want to change. You know, nobody's telling you, you need to change it this way. It provides those ideas to say, well, you know, you can change your financial personality. You can learn more about financial personality. You can become an entrepreneur. The very first story is Bootsy and Diva, the cat, and she becomes their entrepreneur. We also use the story of Jack and the Beanstalk. Jack and the Beans. Jack starts a company, and he decides he's going to go with a coffee shop. You know, and it gives all this information about starting to be an entrepreneur. You can choose which direction you want to learn. It builds on itself. It starts on the importance of education, the importance of financial personality, perhaps being an entrepreneur. The stories keep on building and building and building. The next one goes on to estate planning, how to plan for your particular family to provide for them in case you're not able to be there. Then it goes into a risk-averse investment story, which we call Snow Wit and the Six Savvy Dwarfs, managing the risk so that you don't have to be rescued. You know, so many people don't manage the risk well. You know, they don't know what the risk-reward idea is all about. You know, if you're making a risk on your investments, you have to make sure that there's ample reward on the other side. And then we also have the Red Riding Hood story, about Grandma Hood. And, you know, more times than not, Robert, you can't imagine how many people get into their older years and they don't have a plan for taking care of themselves, and they really do need to depend upon their family to help them out there. You know that about 67% of the people say they don't want their family to take care of them as they get older, but then they get almost 75% end up having their family, you know, and by planning for that, it's so much easier for you in your long run. And then we end the book with a wonderful story of when plans don't work out and regrouping and reevaluating, because everybody should plan, probably once a year, revisit your plan and figure out how you could go. But the very last story, the epilogue, is about a wicked spell breaks, and it's actually a true story of when my son went into a coma for 4 months and how we managed that during that period of time.
And also, you said something that was quite significant in there. People were really paying attention. What Financial Fables does allows people to open their own mind, discover their own path, and feel comfortable on it.
That's definitely what you need to do nowadays. You know, Robert, the lecture is over. People don't want to be lectured to anymore. They want to be able to make their own decisions. And this is what the book does for them. You know, it helps them. They can open up any chapter and say, I want to learn about this, and then direct their attention to it. They can choose whether they want to spend a day on it or they want to spend 2 weeks upon that. You know, if they want to dwell into every one of the websites that are given and really reflect upon it, they can spend 2 weeks going through each and every one of those stories and really get, you know, almost months of information from it. Or they can say, you know what, I'm just going to spend 5 minutes today, read this story, and maybe just take a look. You know, because a lot of times, you know, one of the reasons we did it in this approach, Robert, is that most people think about dealing with their finances is like pulling teeth. I mean, they would rather go to the dentist than to learn about financial concepts. It's boring. I mean, really boring. Most people just don't like it.
But, you know, the energy of money is fascinating when you look at money as energy.
Oh, it is. It is, because it motivates. I, you know, when you think of, don't have to think about it as a currency, but think about what it helps people to do. You know, it's money is people's food. Money is people's homes. Money is the way they decide they're going to spend their time. You know, whether they're going to go to the movies, if they're going to enjoy the latest film out. Money is, you know, it is not basically how much money you have, but how you utilize the money that you have and how you direct it. You know, people can be so, you know, expand themselves. But it's the energy. It's the energy behind it. It's great.
And that's the thing. Wisdom, innovation equals cash flow.
I'm sorry, your innovation equals cash flow. Right. You're right. You're so right. And this is why I said I totally love the way that you help people expand their minds with the rhyme. You know, because I already think that they're starting on that path by innovating, you know, taking their innovations, taking their ideas, being more creative. Even if the very lowliest job that anybody can have, they can be creative and be more successful. Because I always tell people, the first thing I tell people is, you know, when they say, what's the best investment that I can actually have? And I'll say, well, you know, the best investment that you can have is invest in yourself. You invest in yourself because you will make the difference in your life. You have that ability. If you're educated, and it doesn't matter what kind of education, it could be a trade school. It could be a college degree, even up to an advanced postgraduate degree. Whatever education you have, you know, there's a tremendous amount of people who have been successful in life. You know, a lot of people don't realize that Steve Jobs dropped out of college and went to form Apple. You know, and actually, a really interesting thing about Steve Jobs is that he dropped out of college and he decided he was going to take a calligraphy class. And he was going to learn about the way letters are formed. And, you know, you can look at your whole typewriter now and the things that you have on your platform and look at all those script writings and the wonderful way that you can express yourself in emails. And thank Steve Jobs, because he was a pioneer in doing that, all because he dropped out of college and went to a calligraphy class.
You know, if you look at all the inventions in the world, and all the real rich people, very few of them got a college degree.
Well, you know, because they're marching to their own drum. It's not that a college degree is bad. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of people who are very rich, and they have a college degree, and they have other degrees behind them. But it's not whether you have a college degree does not make or break you. They, you know, it's really whether you've invested in yourself. And if that's a college degree, that's good. If it's a trade degree, that's good. But it's the amount of, like I said, Steve Jobs didn't invest in himself by getting the college degree. He invested in going to a calligraphy class and learning more about that. He wanted to learn more, you know, and be better. And then he came up with all those wonderful fonts that Apple came up with at the beginning. And then everyone else, you know, expanded upon.
You know, it isn't the college education. It's ones that are willing to self-educate, no matter whether it's got a degree or not, will expand the world.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, this is why this Financial Fables is a great book for self-growth and finance in your financial world, is because you decide how much you want to go ahead and expand your education. A lot of people work a 9-to-5 job, Robert, and sometimes they're working 9-to-9. There's a lot of people that are working 12-hour days to make ends meet, especially in this economy. And to tell you the truth, they thank God that they have a job to go to every day. But, you know, it's hard to get out of that cycle of, you know, just going to work every day and come home being tired and you know, maybe you need to take the kids off to soccer practice, or you need to go, or you're going to go to the gym. You know, you're in a pattern, and sometimes it's hard to break that pattern. And Financial Fables lets you go ahead and break that pattern by spending just a couple minutes a day, or, again, as long as you want. You know, any type of reading, even if they have your book, by their bed, you know, Dear Is My Friend, and they pick it up and read a couple minutes on it every night. They're taking a step towards self-improvement, self-growth, that's going to give them the best return on investment for themselves.
The book is Financial Fables, Seven Tales to Transform Your Life, Your Financial Life, and More. It's on Amazon.com. And give out your website real quick, Christine.
It is financialstorytelling.com. FINANCIAL, storytelling.com. And it's actually on all the major books, not only on Amazon, but all the major bookstores. It's on Barnes & Noble. And anything I tell people, don't go to eBay to buy the book. One time somebody put a signed copy on eBay for $75. The book retails for $12.95, and you should get it from a major online store for that amount.
And I really want to thank Christine. We'll have Christine back periodically because the reason the country's broke is we don't understand money.
Well, absolutely, Robert. And I tell you, I worked with MHN, which is a part of the Department of Defense. And one of the things that they stress very, very hard, and they have this for soldiers now, is that our financial stability is a matter of national security. And it is true. We need to do a better job to be financially stable. We need to be a strong country.
And, yes, and I want to thank Christine. We're out of time. Christine, I want to thank the listeners and you for being my guest and them for listening. And I want to thank everybody that's listened to my radio station show here. It's my honor and privilege. And it's Financial Fable, Seven Tales to Transform Your Financial Life and More. Expand your life with a
thank you, Robert. Thank you to your listeners, too.
All right. Thank you very much. And we'll see everybody Thursday night with Landon. And we're going to talk about sovereignty. And financial security is sovereignty.
Cool. Take care.
Anyway, thank you and good night, everybody.
Good night.